Now, you've heard this disclaimer before on the NPR Politics podcast, but we are recording this on Friday morning, and events do have a way of springing up pretty quickly. So if you're hearing this on, say, Monday, please do keep that in mind. So you may have heard that there's an election coming up, and we can't have an election without an onslaught of political comedy and satire. You've got, to name just one example, Saturday Night Live, which has been doing it for more than 40 years. And in 2016 alone, SNL has been able to break through the din of late-night comedy, going viral with its debate segments, the ones with Kate McKinnon and Alec Baldwin as Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and just recently in a segment called Black Jeopardy. Now, Glenn, you are a fan of this Black Jeopardy segment.
I very much am, because it's an outlier, right? SNL historically has had a pretty broad approach to political satire, which you can't have, because satire needs to be pointed, needs to have a point of view. SNL is known for having a pretty broad approach, right? They concentrate on their political impressions, which are not necessarily apolitical, but they often are. Right. They're just taking something about a person and amplifying it. But the political impressions that break out are those that actually have a point of view. So if you remember the Bush versus Dukakis debate sketch where Dana Carvey was doing his very good Bush impression, the thing that broke out was the Dukakis moment when John Lovitz played Michael Dukakis saying, "I can't believe I'm losing to this guy."
So let's just stay the course and keep on track. Stay the course.
You still have 50 seconds left, Mr. Vice President.
Well, let me just sum up. On track, stay the course, 1,000 points of light, stay the course.
Mm-hmm. Governor Dukakis, rebuttal.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
That actually had a point. That is not something that SNL generally has, especially with the celebrity impressions. I mean, Kate McKinnon is doing a great job as Clinton. Alec Baldwin's doing a great job as Trump, nailing the characters. You do see something behind Kate McKinnon's eyes, a certain desperation, which is a little bit political. It's almost a statement.
Right.
But the Black Jeopardy sketch stands out because it actually says something. It made an observation, finding the common ground between the Black community and the Trump voter in a way that was kind of gentle but pointed.
Let's go to they out here saying for 8.
Okay, the answer there. They out here saying that every vote counts. Oh, Doug again.
What is, come on, they already decided who wins even before it happens.
Yes! Yes!
And the button on that sketch, the last moment, was really the thing that actually brought it all together.
Let's take a look at our final Jeopardy category. Lives that matter. Well, it was good while it lasted, Doug.
I know, I got a lot to say about this.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. When we come back, we'll play the national anthem and just see what the hell happens. We'll be right back.
Okay, so you've got SNL, you've got your late-night network talk shows, you've got more recent upstarts like Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, and Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and this year what you don't have, for the most part, he's made occasional appearances, is Jon Stewart, who stepped down from The Daily Show last year, making way for Trevor Noah.
Yeah, and he's created a vacuum, Jon Stewart, by his absence, and a lot of people say they miss him terribly. Half the country misses him terribly,
right.
I would say, because he was a voice for a progressive voice. I think when we're talking about comedy or satire, it's a lot easier for progressives to make comedy than it is necessarily for conservatives.
Sure.
Conservatives can, but I think progressives have the wind at their back because satire exists to challenge the status quo, not necessarily to upend it, but certainly to question it.
Sure.
And the conservative principle is the status quo is the status quo.
Well, you have challenging of the status quo on conservative sides as well.
Exactly. There's a long American tradition of holding very noble ideals, but there's a longer American tradition of challenging those ideals.
Right.
This goes back to the comedy of Mark Twain and Will Rogers and Andy Griffith and the Beverly Hillbillies. It's possible to make comedy from a conservative point of view if it's about just plain folks. We are practical, and your ideals are unrealistic, and we are going to puncture the stuffed shirts. We're going to go after these people who hold these unrealistic beliefs.
Yeah, you populism versus elitism.
Exactly. And that's why there's some wind at the back of conservatives now, because there is a liberal elite. And a lot of people in writing rooms of many of these shows come from the same background. There was an article by Hank Stuever in the Washington Post on November 1st, which pointed out that both Samantha Bee and John Oliver, who are doing great jobs and are both coming from a left-of-center place.
Right.
And both have a certain sense of dudgeon, certain outrage animates them.
And there's definitely a tone, John Stewart had this as well, of exasperation.
Exactly. Both of those writers' rooms came up with pretty much the same Waffle House joke to stand in for rural America.
Right.
So they're using the same metaphors because they're coming from the same place.
There are several areas in this country where the only accessible hospital is a Catholic facility.
Catholic hospitals are kind of like the Waffle House of medical care. If Waffle House got $115 billion a year in federal funds.
Because even in a rural area, alternative pain treatments should be at least as easy to find as Waffle Houses, which, like heroin, are both hazardous to your health and dangerously addictive. And to put it more...
So there are some voices that I miss. I miss Larry Wilmore. I like that Samantha Bee's on the air because she's coming at it from a woman's perspective. She's bringing a woman's perspective.
Well, and so many of these late night hosts, I mean, it's all dudes.
It's all dudes.
Her.
It's all dudes.
And Chelsea Handler is floating around.
Right. What I love about the John Oliver show last week tonight is that when he wades into politics, he can wade into it. He did a whole segment about looking at the third party candidates. But he loves to spend time on not necessarily politics, but policies.
Yeah.
By giving attention to giant swaths of the American life that are just don't get any kind of attention. And he does adopt this explainer tone, talking about things like opioids and school segregation and sex education. But he's doing it in an animated way. He's giving you the medicine with a bit of sugar.
With jokes.
Yes.
You know, where you expect there to be jokes.
Exactly.
You make an interesting point about John Oliver. I think John Oliver and Samantha Bee, to an extent, first of all, they're natural successors to John Stewart because they all have that Daily Show pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
But they also fall into the category of this, like, comedians with a conscience,
yeah.
Right? Like, Jon Stewart got so much media coverage as, like, the conscience of America, and he's this voice in the media. But it also had this sort of scolding tone to it where Jon Stewart was presented as, like, comedy's moral authority.
Right.
And I wonder, like, are we missing that, or is that even necessary?
Well, it's gotten a lot more diffuse. There's a lot more white dudes out there doing comedy
yes.
now. Seth Meyers is reverting back to his old SNL Weekend Update mode with these closer look segments. And I think both you and I, Stephen, share the fact that we don't watch these shows. We wait for them to kind of bubble up on social media to get that kind of attention, or for somebody to tell us, oh, you should have seen X last night.
Yeah.
That happens with Samantha Bee a lot. That happens with certainly John Oliver a lot. Doesn't happen with Trevor Noah a great deal.
Right.
And that's interesting to me because that guy's great. And I just watched the election special where they kind of combine their year-long coverage of election stuff and solid jokes in there. Good stuff. He's a very genial guy, right? And there's not that animated sense of outrage. There is just this slightly sardonic, not exasperation, but just what's going on? And that doesn't necessarily have the energy that's going to let it escape what you mentioned before, this sort of din of all this coverage all the time.
Well, yeah, and I think there is a loudness that comes through in a lot of the clips that wind up getting written about. You know, like you were saying, these shows get broken out into clips that pop up in articles. Look what Seth Meyers said about this. Look what John Oliver said about this. Look what Samantha Bee said about this. And I think, like you said, that genial quality sometimes makes it harder to, like, feel a need to write an article about this amazing rant on The Daily Show.
Right. And there are, again, most of these voices are center-left voices. There are, Dennis Miller was a voice from the right, a humorous voice from the right, doesn't have a show right now. Bill Maher was historically coming from a libertarian point of view.
Sure.
Now he's gone
but
so...
it's very left-libertarian.
It's very left-libertarian and really hardcore anti-Trump. The Greg Gutfeld show on Fox, I watched a few episodes of this, trying to figure out why this guy hasn't bubbled up in the same way that others have. And I think we've got a clip from a segment where he's talking about current events. He's talking about Hillary Clinton email stuff. That anger is there, but I don't think the jokes necessarily are.
So is this scandal a big deal? Who cares? The left made a career out of turning molehills into mountains. Remember Romney's binders full of women? The left brutalized him over that, and he turned the other cheek, and he lost. Maybe 2016 is the year the right stopped turning cheeks and instead kicked some ass.
See? Again, anger, just,
right.
Just as much as Samantha Bee has sort of a blistering take on things.
Sure.
But one of the things you notice is that line, was red meat for his audience, you'd expect. And this is another thing that Hank Stuever pointed out in his article, that this is an echo chamber, right?
Yeah.
So when a host like that delivers a line like that, it's just applause as opposed to laughter. That crowd didn't necessarily go with him where he was going.
I noticed that.
Yeah. And for whatever reason, I think for The Daily Show, you have people waiting months for tickets for The Gutfeld Show. I don't know, but you might have people out on Times Square saying, you guys like comedy? You know, I don't know exactly how they get their studio audiences.
Sure.
But that's a marked difference. The other marked difference is both Samantha Bee and John Oliver have dispensed with the notion of guests. Mm-hmm. You'll never see the third lead from NCIS telling a wacky story about her Mexican vacation because nobody cares.
Right.
Some of the hosts, like Seth Meyers, are still wedded to that old school format. Colbert, also, still wedded to that format. So it's an uneasy alliance.
Well, yeah, and I wanted to bring up the difference between political satire and political interview.
Right.
So you have all these late night talk shows. Your Jimmy Kimmel, your Jimmy Fallon, your Stephen Colbert.
Your other Jimmys.
Your James Corden. And they're mixing comedy with these interview spots that often, when they're interviewing celebrities, they're promotional in nature. And when they're interviewing politicians, they're promotional in nature.
Right.
And it feels like a very uneasy fit. If you have scathing political commentary over here, and then you have an interview with the person you're doing scathing political commentary on, that is a very uneasy thing. And I think the notion of shows that dispense with guests have a way of getting around that, as opposed to there's an episode of Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show in September where he interviews Donald Trump. And Jimmy Fallon has his Trump impersonation, but then he's sitting there face to face with Trump. And there's a moment in it where he tussles Trump's hair. It's like, can I touch your hair? And then he tussles Trump's hair.
I just wanted to know if there's something we could do that's just not presidential, really, or something that we can do now that we're just both civilians.
Like what? This is... I'm not liking the sound of this. Go ahead.
Can I mess your hair up?
And Jimmy Fallon got absolutely eviscerated for this in the press. First of all, Jimmy Fallon is not where I necessarily go for my humor with teeth.
Yeah.
That's not his thing. That show is whimsical and playful and light. And there have definitely, I have seen interviews with Hillary Clinton where there's been this very, very, very light touch to it. And it just feels, it doesn't feel of a piece with shows that are trying to dispense satire.
Yeah, I got to say, I was a little surprised at the vehemence with which Fallon was attacked for that. I mean, it was dumb, but I mean, we're lucky that he didn't play Twister with him. You know, I mean, like that's that's the level of that show. That's what that guy does.
Right.
And he's not going to challenge anybody, and he's not going to be the place where you go for the hard hitting interview. It's he's doing the same interview, the same kind of jokey thing he would do with anybody else. I get it. And in a hyper partisan, hyper polarized election season, that thing does stand out. But I mean, that's Fallon's going to Fallon.
And on November 9th, November 10th, we will be very, very happy to have that playfulness, that lightness has such an important place in the late night landscape, which can be very acerbic and very dark.
Mm-hmm.
But it's weird. I think it works a lot better in December than it does in September.
That's
true. In 2016.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of the show. You can find us at facebook.com/PCHH or on Twitter at PCHH. Thank you, Glenn.
Thanks, man.
And thanks to all of you for listening.
Hey friends, if you live in or around Washington, D.C., we wanted to let you know about an exciting event hosted by our own Linda Holmes. Next Saturday, November 12th at 7:30 p.m., NPR presents an exclusive panel with the stars from Amazon's new show, Good Girls Revolt. Join us at the Newseum for lively discussion of journalism, politics, and the arts with stars Joy Bryant, Aaron Drake, and Genevieve Angelson, plus Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, journalist Lynn Povich, and producer Linda Obst. Tickets are going fast, so get yours now at nprpresents.org.